Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Cynthia Cherish Malloran, Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. Before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love, that is spelled L-U-V, and hashtag using Primary Food. Heritage underscore radio, and hashtag RevLove. So welcome to the third season of Primary Food. Wow. I'm kind of impressed with myself. I didn't think I'd be able to make it this far, but I did. And what exactly is primary food? So I learned this really great concept in nutrition school at IIN, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, that the food you eat, you know, the stuff we put in our mouths and chew and enjoy, we consider that secondary food. Primary food is everything else in life that nourishes us before we sit down and eat. And that's stuff like enjoying music, reading a book, hanging out with friends, cooking food, great jobs, creative expression, playing games, exercise. And I'm so glad that I learned this because it was the high quality primary food that kept my life while going through chemotherapy last year that kept me happy and healing my cancer. So today we're going to talk about the act of cooking. And we're here with a great organization hosting an event that everyone needs to know about. But before I tell you about this and before my guests speak, you can call in live at 718-497-2128. Again, that's 718-497-2128 with questions, comments, and anything. So, but before I begin, Primary Food is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. So please help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now or do it at the end of this episode. Okay, so today we've got with us Chef Angie Marr.
Hi.
And Beth Kling.
Hi.
Now, we're going to talk about an event called A Second Helping of Life. Beth, tell us about this.
Well, A Second Helping of Life is a great event that's going to be happening on September 19th, Monday, September 19th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Chelsea Piers. And it's a tasting event featuring 24 of the top women chefs in New York City. And it supports an organization called SHARE, which provides dedicated experience support for women facing breast and ovarian cancers.
And this event has been going on for how many years now?
This is the 13th year, actually. Okay. The 13th year of the New York City Women Chefs community really coming out and supporting a fantastic cause.
And the organization SHARE. Give us a little background on SHARE, because this is an organization I actually had not heard about, and I'd like to think I know everything. Well, I didn't know anything about this.
Well, actually, SHARE is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year, 40 years of providing support for women facing breast and ovarian cancers, and their families and friends and caregivers as well. Mm-hmm. It runs on a peer model, which basically means that it is survivors and people who have faced the diseases who are helping patients and others who are somehow faced with these diseases, whether it's caregivers or people who are, you know, currently living with a diagnosis or going through treatment, or even, you know, dealing with some of the issues that happen after you finish treatment and you're still wondering, you know, what the future holds for you. So all of the services are free of charge, and there's fantastic support groups that happen in person, over the telephone, online. There's educational programs that happen in person and online as well, and a great library of resources that people can access. There are also outreach campaigns to, you know, make sure that information about these diseases can reach people in medically underserved communities as well. So it's you know, what's really astounding about it is that, you know, it started in 1976, and it was started by a doctor who thought that that his patients could actually benefit his, he was a breast cancer surgeon, who thought that his patients could benefit from supporting one another, because in 1976, no one was talking about cancer. No one would use the word breast publicly. And so we started basically as a group of 12 people and a doctor, and we are now reaching 55,000 people a year.
That's incredible. That's incredible. That's really meaningful to me, because as a breast cancer survivor and going through it in the past year, year and a half, I realized the importance of having community. And to think that only a few decades ago, there was no community, that it was so taboo, that it was so scary. I mean, it's just as scary that today it's so normal almost, that diagnoses are popping up left and right. And I'm not just talking breast cancer. That's just kind of the way it is. But it's great to have something like this event and these organizations in place for people like me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we hear, you know, a day doesn't go by that we don't hear someone say what a difference connecting with Cher made to them as they were facing, you know, either breast or ovarian cancer. That, you know, having the community, having the support, and having the information that you could get only from another patient has been, is just invaluable. I mean, you can get great information from your doctors. You can get, you know, I don't want to say that it's necessarily great information from Dr. Google, but sometimes, you know, you can be overwhelmed with it. But Dr. to actually have, you know, another person who's been through the disease there to be able to tell you sort of what to expect and how they managed it.
No doubt.
Makes a huge difference.
No doubt about it. And I find that after going through the experience, I've become a teacher. A teacher I didn't want to ever become, and be a member of a club I never wanted to join, but the value of what I have to teach and what I've helped other women with and men doesn't make it worth it, but it balances it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important in my healing. And I want to put that out there, that if you're going through something like this, that the benefit of it is that you can help the next person. And that's what this is all about. So I'd like to invite people to this event, a second helping of life. Let's talk about tickets, where the funding goes, who's going to be there, because it's pretty exciting. I'm looking at the list of the celebrity sous chefs and so on and so forth. So let's tell the listeners all about this event.
Okay, so the event actually has a couple dozen, as I said earlier, of the top female chefs in New York City. And our executive chef for the event is with us here today. It's Angie Marr of the Beatrice Inn, who actually just opened the restaurant under her own ownership a week ago. So, you know,
props.
The fact she is doing this, that she's doing this event at this incredibly busy time, just it's just a testament to how generous this community is and how supportive they've been to, you know, they really make our work possible. So we cannot thank them enough for all that they do. Every year we have Rebecca Charles and her lobster roll. And she, you know, it is absolutely the most popular.
It just sounds like she's walking in with a lobster roll.
And her lobster.
Golden lobster roll.
And her millions and her thousands of lobster rolls that she's donated to share over the
years.
You know, she's
incredible.
Just, yeah. And so we've got this great A-list of chefs. It includes Alex Guarnaschelli.
Yeah, you need to name drop right now.
We've got Amanda Cohen of Dirt Candy, who always has like a really interesting, you know, one year it was a broccoli hot dog.
A broccoli hot dog.
A broccoli hot dog, because everything is
how
vegetarian.
Was it?
It was amazing.
Okay.
It was fantastic.
It's got to be the counterpoint to all my meat, right? That I always bring every year.
Well, you know, we want to say that we represent everyone.
And that's that's balance right there. That's fine. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Who else is going to be there?
We've got
Anita Lowe. Anita Lowe from Anissa. She's awesome. Just fantastic.
Yeah. And she's so there every year. And she was actually our first executive chef and was really instrumental in developing the whole event 13 years ago. Wow. And she's just a fantastic supporter of Cheryl's also. And we've got I'm sorry, I'm somehow blanking here. I don't know how I could because I'm so overwhelmed by how many
Colleen Grapes is always so fantastic. I mean, she just makes some of the best desserts ever. Leah Cohen of Pig and Cow. I just love her food.
Patty Jackson of Delaware and Hudson here in Brooklyn. She is so great. She's such a great Cher supporter also.
And also, Roxanne from Kingsley.
Yes, Roxanne Spruance.
Kingsley. I think she's one of the most, I think she's incredibly talented, and I always have a great time with her at all the events, so I'm really excited.
So
Barbara Sibley in La Palapa. And this year we have Melba Wilson from Melba's Restaurant for the first time, so that should be really cool and interesting.
Amy's Bread. I actually didn't realize Amy was a real person.
Yes, Amy Sherber. Amy Sherber is a real person who's come to the event since the beginning also.
It's not like a Little Debbie doesn't exist. This is fantastic. And then the sous chef. So this is really funny for me to read through this list of all these people who are being sous chefs, people I recognize from TV news personalities.
Yes.
Tell me about this. It's such a great combination.
So when the event was conceived 13 years ago, they really wanted to, we wanted to make it a power women kind of event.
Love it.
So you want to pair, the women who we have as sous chefs, most of them, they're not sous chefs really, but we call them sous chefs and we sort of say celebrity sous chefs in quotes because they're not really sous chefs. But they're, women who are celebrities in the area. We have, as you said, TV news people who are actors on stage and screen, Broadway actors. We've got authors. We have, TV personalities. We've got...
Ruth Reichel, amazing.
Ruth Reichel, who's the New York Times best-selling author, and
Megan Fairchild,
who's a New York City Ballet principal as well as a Broadway actress.
And I just want to say this name because I love saying it, Shade Baderinois.
Oh, Shade Baderinois is so wonderful to have Shade Baderinois.
Blackman. This is a wonderful mix.
And our host this year is Tamsin Fidel.
Fantastic.
So we are really excited about that.
So for people who aren't familiar with the New York...
The New York media scene, right.
Let's give them a little background on some of these sous chefs. So they're journalists.
Yes, they are journalists. Many of them are anchors. We have Cindy Hsu also from CBS, who might not have made it to this particular version of the list, but she is. She is going to be there.
That's it. This is so much fun. Yeah. So they're sous chefing.
Yes. Yeah. So they're, I mean... Angie, you've had sushi.
Yeah, I've done. Yeah.
What's that so like?
This is such a great event. I mean, just as a chef, I love doing this event. I look forward to it every year. This is actually my third year doing Cher, and also this is my first year being the culinary chair. So, it's really exciting for me. I love having the celebrity sous chefs. We always have a lot of fun. I always get a different person every year. But, it's just great. I think it brings a lot of fantastic energy and awareness to this event. And to get that many amazing women from, the journalist world and from the food world all in one room, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, Beth, you said a phrase that I love. You said power women.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk that for a minute. Women in power, powerful women. What's your take on that and the importance of expressing that?
Well, I mean, I think the greatest thing about it is when you bring women together who are powerful to actually, work towards supporting a really important cause that affects women. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you go to the event, there's almost like a tangible energy in the air.
I can't wait.
It's so fun.
Amazing. And
I'm getting chills and goosebumps.
Because not only is there the best food in the city, there's also, these great talented chefs who are making it, there's also like this dedication to a cause. People really feel good you know, being there supporting it. I mean, everyone from the chefs to the people who are attending, you know, there's just, it's like an extra benefit to it. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about the cause. So it's breast cancer and ovarian cancers. Why specifically breast and ovarian?
Well,
is there a reason? Or?
Actually, it supports Share, and Share's work is to support women facing those diseases. It, as I said, it started as a breast cancer organization and became, as you know, as well, an ovarian cancer support organization some 15 or 20 years after its founding, because there were actually a number of women who needed the needed support for ovarian cancer. And Share responded by actually building, you know, programs and services to meet the needs for that. Ovarian cancer affects fewer women than breast cancer, but the mortality rates are very high, and
I see.
The need for support in that in for ovarian cancer has been great, and especially back in the early 90s when Share began to offer programming. Was, you know, it was really, you know, there really were not other support groups out there.
So September being Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month,
yes,
and October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the timing is right.
Yes.
So let's talk about our chef for the our executive. What is your position exactly?
Our executive chef, yes.
Executive chef,
yes,
for the event.
Yes.
Chef Angie Marr. Why is it important for you to be a part of this?
You know, this is a really important charity for me to be a part of. I, you know, my mother was affected by breast cancer. My aunt was affected by cancer. So, you know, if this is a way that I can help to give back to that community, I, you know, there's a lot of charities that I donate to throughout the year. You know, we're involved in City Harvest and a lot of other stuff. But this one specifically is very close to my heart. It always has been. You know, Rebecca Charles and Deborah DeClemente from Pearl Oyster Bar, they're dear, dear friends of mine. And when they asked me to be a part of this event, it was, you know, 3 years ago. And I was so honored. You know, I was so honored to even be asked to go cook among all of these amazing, amazing chefs that go there every year and give to such a great cause. You know, and especially because it really hits home for me. Because I haven't lived through it myself, but my loved ones have.
Yeah.
And you know, if there's anything that we can do to better other people's experiences, I'm all about that.
Yeah. So it feels really good to be a part of it.
It does.
Yeah. How do people get tickets for this event?
You can go to sharebenefit.org and yeah, tickets are available there. And for information about Share, you can go to sharecancersupport.org. And we also have a helpline, 844-ASK-SHARE. And that's for anyone who has questions about breast or ovarian cancer who might be facing it. A helpline, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, which is staffed by survivors of breast or ovarian cancer.
I should definitely talk to you about volunteering,
yes,
my time for this, because
I
would love to help the, yeah, next woman for, yeah, sure. Well, Chef Angie Marr, let's talk about your background and why you love being in this world of food and where you're at now.
Yeah.
Accomplishing new things.
Accomplishing new things, definitely. Well, I'm actually a career changer. So I've only been cooking for a little over 6 years.
This is amazing. Okay, hold on. This is one of these primary food types of things,
yeah,
where I feel like when you have that need in you to do something else that feeds your soul,
yeah,
you have to do it, right?
You have to do it.
So what did you used to do?
I was actually in commercial real estate.
Very different.
And yeah. But my family comes from the world of food. My aunt was Ruby Chow. So, you know, I grew up around that world. I fought it for a really long time. And
interesting.
Yeah.
What was your tipping point in the change from?
You know, I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy. You know, I wasn't happy in what I was doing. I wasn't really excited about, you know, going to work every day. So I took some time off. I traveled through East Africa and Spain, and you know, I was in Spain and I was,
wow,
eating tapas by myself at like 10:30 at night, and I had this realization. I was like, you know, I just really need to cook. So I came back to the States. I moved to New York, and everything's just kind of fallen into place. And
that is so exciting.
Yeah.
Stories like this need to be told.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
I feel like women don't take that great step to change
Yeah.
Everything.
It's scary. Yeah. You know, I think it's scary. And I think that, you know, as sometimes, you know, maybe we're like programmed to just kind of like, you know, follow the path that's been laid out. And it's like, you know, let's make our own path.
Well, let's talk about why it was scary, because I know there are people listening who can relate to the scary yeah. part. And then let's talk about the reward.
Yeah.
And what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I left a job with, you know, health insurance, 401k and an expense account. And, I moved to New York and just really, you know, I started cooking, and I've had the great fortune to work for some of the most amazing chefs. April Bloomfield was Cher's executive chef last year and the year before. And she, you know, I worked for her. She was my mentor. She is a fantastic, fantastic human being. And, you know, she really, really helped guide me. And she taught me how to run a Michelin restaurant. So she's fantastic.
That's like an amazing quote. She taught me how to run a Michelin restaurant.
Yeah, like, no, I say it all the time. You know, it's really interesting. I, you know,
what does it even mean? Like, someone like me is like, my mind just got blown and replaced. Like, you can be taught to run a Michelin restaurant like that.
Yeah, it's I worked for Andrew Tarlow in Brooklyn, and I worked at Diner and Marlowe and Sons, and I opened up Reynard, and that's where I learned how to cook. That's really where I learned how to cook. And then I went to go work for April Bloomfield, and she taught me how to run a Michelin-starred restaurant and run a business.
I know this is a huge question we're about to ask, but what does it mean when you say how to cook?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I always thought I knew how to cook, you know, and cooking at home is really different. And then I got into a kitchen and I realized I didn't know how to cook.
What did you not know?
Cooking in a restaurant is completely different than cooking at home. And, I don't think a lot of people realize that.
No, I don't realize that. Yeah, that's why I'm like so blown away by this statement. Like,
yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. You know, I was a home cook for years. I entertained all the time for years, but you know, I think this needs to be said, and I don't think enough people say this, but you know, being in a kitchen is like being in the military. It is. It's like being in a military. It is, you know, that's what it is. And I don't think I realized that before I got into cooking, and I love it. I love
it.
And
you love it. So I was going to ask you if you love it.
Oh, I love it.
So what about that structure are you attracted to?
The structure.
The structure.
The structure. The structure, the discipline, the commitment to perfection.
Wow.
It's, it's everything.
I mean, just as you're saying that and as you lit up saying that, like I could feel like a vibration of you're like drooling for it almost.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think as chefs, we're all kind of masochists, you know.
She said it, not me.
That's true.
That was my impression, but I never wanted to say that, but she said it.
It's true. It is.
So your style and background of cooking, tell us about that.
Well, my mother grew up in Oxford, which is probably why I was so drawn to April's food, you know. Mm. My father is Chinese American, but it was like T-bone steaks on the table and jasmine
Chinese,
rice.
I don't think, right?
Yeah, no, T-bone steaks on the table and jasmine rice, so not potatoes. So that's why every year we always do the dry aged burgers at a second helping of life. I'm very drawn to meat. I'm not so big on the vegetables. We'll let Amanda Cohen do that.
Are you talking about the balance again?
Yeah. I'll save that for her. That's how I grew up. I grew up eating meat, and that's really what the Beatrice Inn is about. It's, you know, very much all about meat.
To my carnivores out there, visit the Beatrice Inn. Sorry, vegan friends. What is your favorite thing to prepare?
The 45-day dry aged burger is fantastic. It's actually what I do every year at a second helping of life. We do, we're very well known for a burger. And it's just fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of like the best French onion soup you ever had, but on a burger. But my favorite thing to cook at the restaurant is it's a milk braised pork shoulder.
And milk braised.
Yeah.
Pork shoulder. Wow.
Yeah. I think I pulled it out of like one of my dad's really old Italian cookbooks when I was like 15. And it was like my first contribution to Sunday supper. And the first version was terrible. But I would make it every Sunday. And it definitely was not as refined as it is now on my menu.
I love this.
But yeah, I now serve it at the restaurant. And it's, you know, it's one of the dishes that's really comforting. It's home for me. You know, when I eat that, it reminds me very much of my family.
I'm so touched by that. I love family cooking tradition memories. Yeah. All of that just warms me up. Yeah. Just thinking about it is like love.
It is.
It's like, what does food mean to you?
It is, you know, I mean, food, I think, is very important. Food is, it's healing. It's the great equalizer.
The great equalizer.
It is. Food is, for me, food's like kind of the great equalizer. It is, you know, it's one of the reasons why I love living in New York. It's, you know, you could be completely broke or have $1 million. You are still riding the subway. You know, and food is kind of like that. It's like the great equalizer. It doesn't matter. It should be accessible for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it should just really be good. It should be soulful. It should make you feel things. And you know, I always say this, you know, I think that food really, it brings people together. Mm-hmm. It brings people together. You know, I've always said this, and, you know, it all starts around the dinner table. Everything starts around the dinner table, and that's it.
I love that so much. And what do you think needs to be improved or better in the world of food? In the industry and everything?
Excuse me.
I know that it's like a list of things.
Oh, there's a list of things. You know, I think that right now is a really exciting time to be in the food industry. You know, right now there's never been as high of a focus as right now on the chefs, at all. And it's, you know, when I told my mom I was going to quit my job and I was going to go to culinary school, I was going to become a chef. She was like, "You're crazy. That is that's a man's job. And that's like a working class person's job. Like, you sit in an office," and like, you know, that I think was kind of like the old perception. And right now it's like, I think chefs are kind of like the new rock stars. You know,
how did you feel when she said that? That's so something my mom or dad would say.
You
and
know
then
what?
I'd be disheartened and then cry.
When I was 7 years old. So here's how I knew so I've obviously always been a food person, but when I was 7, I took my first trip to Paris, and I ordered the most offensive thing that I could possibly think of when I was 7, just to, like, you know, be really crazy. I had kidneys. I had veal kidneys when I was 7, and they were in cream with cognac, and my dad loves that stuff, so I ate it. My mom was, like, so disgusted, and so that's why I ordered it, I think. And so when she said that, I was like, I should definitely do this. I'm definitely making the right decision.
Did you like that dish, actually?
I loved it. Okay. I cook it now.
I was going to ask that. Thanks. I was like, well, you know, does that sound like a delicious dish to you, Beth?
Not really, no.
What's your palate?
I actually, it's very varied. It just happens to be that particular, you know, when I hear, I don't know, kidneys.
You're not into offal.
Yeah, no.
Is that how you say it? Offal?
Offal.
Offal.
Offal, yeah.
Offal. Oh, gosh. Well, I just love these stories. I want to talk about your restaurant, which has just opened.
It's crazy.
Tell me about
this. It's crazy.
Seriously, mad props.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I, you know, I'm so excited and so honored. And, you know, I've been the chef at the Beatrice Inn for 3 years. You know, I left working for April Bloomfield to go take over the kitchen there. And, it's been such a labor of love. You know, I just bought it. So this is my first restaurant.
Just bought it.
I just bought it.
You had to. What was it in you that was like, I got to do this?
Yeah, you know, I've always treated that place like it's been my own anyway. Mm. And, you know, when the offer came around, it just really made a lot of sense.
Wow.
So,
love it.
Yeah, it's really exciting. We opened last Thursday. I'm so honored and excited by the amount of support that the culinary community has showed for us. It's so humbling.
Okay, well, we got to check it out. Where is the Beatrice Inn, listeners?
Yeah, it's on West 4th and West 12th in the Village.
Okay, so I'm going to give Angie a high five. And we're going to go to a little break, and I'll see you in a few secs.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Hi, I'm here with Angie Marr, chef at the Beatrice Inn, and Beth Kling from Cher. We're going to talk a little bit more about Cher. So your background with Cher, tell us.
Actually, I've been with Cher for 10 years. I just celebrated my 10th anniversary.
Congrats.
Back in May. Yeah. And I'm, you know, somewhat of an unusual person in terms of, not necessarily, but the most of Cher is survivors of breast or ovarian cancer. A lot of the people who work, or everyone who provides services, are all survivors. And many of the people who work and are really dedicated to the organization are also survivors. I'm not a survivor of breast or ovarian cancer. I came to the organization sort of in the routine way that people come to jobs, you know, finding out about a job, applying for it. And then, but when I arrived, I really felt instantly, or almost instantly, like it was a place that I wanted to be and where I could make a contribution and where, you know, my work was valued. And so while, you know, I really do feel a part of the community of...
You are our ally.
Yes.
That's the term I like to use.
That's right. Yeah.
You don't need to have guilt for not having gone through this. Trust me. You're an ally. Tell us wonderful stories of growth over the years and why people should support Cher and should come to this event. Because after how many years now, like, what have you seen?
Well, I think I have seen over the years so many women and men just getting tremendous support for what they're facing in their lives. There are some, you know, we have the women who provide the services, who are our facilitators, who are our helpline volunteers, are so dedicated to making sure that other people don't have to face or can have the easiest possible time in facing these diseases. One story that I think of is a story of a woman named Marjorie, who is one of our facilitators and helpline volunteers, who's a survivor of breast cancer, who runs a support group for Cher. You know, she's trained by Cher and you know, provides the service to women. And there was one woman who basically had said, you know, I don't think I want to continue with my treatment. I just don't want to do it. Uh-huh. I'm afraid. I'm alone. And Marjorie reached out to her. She said to her, I will go to your treatments with you. Mm. Went to her treatment with her. And so she had her treatment as a result of the support from Marjorie. Wow. And then, you know, this had kind of the same thing, you know, she had kind of the same questions or concerns about surgery, and Marjorie supported her in that as well. So this woman, you know, basically was treated and is alive today because of, you know, the support that she got.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Really important. Yeah. Making a huge difference. And that's just one story. I saw many testimonials. I was reading them and I was like, I can't get through these because it's just, I started kind of trembling. I was like, this is just so beautiful. Really appreciate that. Now, you mentioned that volunteers get trained. So tell us how someone like me or someone who's gone through this can help the next person through Cher. Is there a program we can sign up for? Or?
Well, I mean, all you need to do is contact. Just call 844-ASK-CHER and indicate that you're interested in being a volunteer, and we'll connect you with the people that you need to speak with. I mean, basically everyone who's providing the services are volunteers who have been through the disease, and many of them are people who actually came to Cher for help, found the help so important to them that they wanted to give back. So we have a lot of people who, you know, the journey through Cher starts, can start in many places, but can start as you're getting help And then you decide that you want to actually be one of the people who gives the help. And then you come back and you get training and support to do that, basically.
You just helped me right now coin a term in my head that I think I'm going to use from now on to have a meaningful cancer.
Yeah.
So it's like if you go through an experience and then you can teach or help or support the next person, then your experience has become extremely meaningful and not just a grenade thrown in your life. And I think that's important. So I want to talk more about, you know, this event and funny stories and great stories, disaster stories. Just what comes to mind when you think about people coming to this great, great experience?
Oh, gosh, you know, it's really, really amazing because I just as chefs, I think we're always so busy, you know, it's like the 100-hour work weeks and, you know, we never get to see each other. And
is that an exaggeration, a 100-hour work week?
No, it's not. It's not an exaggeration.
It's wild.
Yeah. It's not. That's like a real thing.
Wow.
I mean, for me at least, I don't know.
Probably you and many.
Probably me and many. Yeah. But you know, we never get to see each other and it's really, really lovely to be at this event with all these amazing women. You know, and we're all friends outside of work as well.
It's really beautiful. I didn't think about that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's such a small community. The culinary community is actually quite small and everyone knows each other. And this is one of these events where, like, you know, like I said earlier, you get all these amazing chefs in one room. So, you know, it's really fun and we always feed each other and it's a blast. And, you know, I always bring we always do the dried burgers and I always bring the ribeye. I always bring some like 60-ounce ribeye or something obscene and then I'll cook it and pass it around to all the chefs.
Something obscene.
Yeah, you know, just something obscenely delicious and huge. And, you know, we cook it, we pass it around to the chefs at the end of the night. It's a lot of fun. And you can always catch Rebecca, Charles, Anita Lowe, and I passing around some tomahawk ribeye bone, eating it at the end of the night over a beer.
Holding the bone.
Yeah, literally, we're like eating it and passing it around. It'll typically be the three of us. So
with a 100-hour work week, what do you do in your downtime? Whenever that is.
I don't think there is. Yeah, I don't think there is. It's like a few hours of sleep and a shower.
Oh, do you have the shower built into the restaurant?
No,
that
no.
You wish.
No, I had to get the gym membership down the street for that. So
you're not kidding, I don't think.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, she's not kidding.
I'm not kidding.
So where would you like to see Cher grow and expand? And how can people help support Cher?
Well, you can go to sharecancersupport.org and donate to the organization. I mean, certainly, you know, we grow with when we basically are able to develop more programs and reach more people. So, you know, how I would like to see Share grow is to be able to reach every woman or person facing breast or ovarian cancer with the help that they need. And we have grown. We've grown tremendously. You know, as I said, we started out as 12 people, and we now are reaching 55,000. And, you know, maybe someday we could reach 500,000.
Well, tell me about your programs, because now, you know, I looked at this document that I have, and I saw that there are many survivor programs, support groups. Yes. Give me some details about that to share with people.
We have 35 support groups around the city and some available through the telephone and teleconference and video conference.
Wow. Okay.
We offer educational programs that are led by experts in the fields of ovarian cancer and breast cancer, both in person and through webinar. So they're also accessible, you know, recordings of them are accessible on our website if people want information later. We have a helpline that's available 7 days a week for breast cancer and ovarian cancer. And all of the people who serve on that helpline, who work on that helpline, are survivors of the disease and volunteers. And we have outreach programs, specifically a program called Share Ambassadors, which reaches medically underserved communities, African-American, Latina. We also have... We have an entire subset or group of programs called Latina Share, which is is for women whose primary language is Spanish. And, you know, through that program, we provide support groups, a helpline, educational programs.
That's really important.
And we have presence in a couple of breast clinics, a program we called Survivor Patient Navigator Program, which basically is a survivor who's bilingual, who's present in a clinic when someone gets a diagnosis of breast cancer or a suspicious finding on a mammogram. This person is there to sort of to support them right in that moment when they hear that news. Right in that moment, right. And they can help them talk to the doctor. They can help them figure out what questions they need to ask. They can help them figure out how to talk to their family. And then they always do follow-up with the people that they meet there.
And that is called the Survivor Patient Navigator. That's incredible.
We also have a program called Pink and Teal, which is basically a corporate seminar program where we visit corporations and provide seminars on breast and ovarian cancer. And that's done by volunteer survivors of breast and ovarian cancer talking about, you know, risks, symptoms, risk factors, things that people need to know, and their own experiences with the diseases. So
talk to me for a sec about Latina Share. How did that come about? That's really important, and I think that is
so that
very
developed
special.
in the 1990s as well, when it became clear that there were a number of women who needed support and needed to be able to access services, but were not able to participate in English. So there were some very powerful volunteers who were bilingual, who decided that, you know, this, we need to offer this service, and basically built it from very small to now, you know, a substantial program, a substantial part of the organization.
I think that is so important.
It is. It's really vital.
And you have also a caregiver circle.
Yes, we have a caregiver support circle, right, which basically is another sort of support community and group for people whose loved ones are facing these diseases. So they could be husbands, they could be partners, they could be, you know, family members, they could, you know, and I know that the groups that we have are really mixed, diverse groups of, you know, men and women who are in, you know, finding themselves in that position of having to provide care.
Do you have nutritional support, considering there's a lot of food talk?
I mean, we certainly have programs, educational programs and webinars that address various aspects of nutrition, no doubt. Yeah. And I think I should have looked at our program guide before I came here, but we will often, you know, what we've been offering are these like walking tours in different parts of the city.
A walking tour.
Where people can learn about neighborhoods where they, you know, that where they can, where there are different restaurants or just sort of stores where they can, you know, buy nutritional foods. And, you know, so.
I understand. Okay. Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about a second helping of life shares event on September 19th. And again, let's tell them where it is and what it's about.
Chelsea Piers, Pier 60 Chelsea Piers, from 6 to 9:30 p.m., a tasting event featuring 24 of New York City's top women chefs serving their signature dishes to support Share, which provides dedicated experience support and information to women facing breast and ovarian cancers.
And Chef Angie Marr, what does it mean for you to be a part of this?
You know, it is it's such an honor, and it's important and humbling. You know, this is, I think, like I said, it's one of my favorite charities. I think it's probably the most meaningful and important one that is close to my heart that I participated in all year.
It sounds pretty magical to me. I can't wait to experience it from here on out. And speaking of magic, let's talk about your necklace for a second. What does it say?
It says In Pursuit of Magic.
I think I found some magic now. I find events like this and people who bring this all together so important. I think that when I got into the world of... Well, suddenly I was in Sloan Kettering and I thought, like, how the hell did I get here? It was very isolating, even though I wasn't physically alone. I definitely felt like, my God, I'm the one that has to navigate through this. And I didn't reach out to support groups until much later in my treatments. And I think it's because I didn't have awareness that there were support groups until I got into the world of it. And I think what's important about talking about it now is that, not that I'm saying that it's good to know about this before you get a diagnosis, but it's kind of good to know about this. Yeah. God forbid there's a diagnosis. And then to share this info and know that if you feel hopeless or scared, there's such a community. There's such a community and allies as yourself, Beth, who really just want the best for people like me. And I have a lot of breast cancer in my family. My father had a lumpectomy, my aunts. So it is very personal to me. And I think about my nieces and the next generation and so on. So things like this help me just share the love and the pre-healing. I like to call it pre-healing. So please come and check out A Second Helping of Life. Buy a ticket, support, or donate to share. This has been the first episode of the third season of Primary Food with Chef Angie Marr of the Beatrice Inn and Beth Kling of Share. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.